Over the seasons, they had swung in a great circle through the wild land that lay north of the Zambezi, feasting on the fruits of different forests scattered over 1,000 miles, timing their arrival as each crop of berries came into full ripening. They had crossed lakes and rivers, and stayed long in the hot swamps of the Sud, where the midday heat, reaching 120 degrees, soothed the aches in the old bull's bones. But then the wanderlust had driven them on to complete the circle of their migration south again, over mountain ranges and across the low alluvial plains of the great rivers, following secret trails and ancient passes that their ancestors had forged, and which they had first trodden as calves at their mother's flank. In these last dozen seasons, however, there were men where there had never been men before. There were white-robed Arabs in the north around the lakes with their long-barreled jezails. There were big-bearded men in the south dressed in dark, rough homespun and hunting from tough, shaggy little ponies, while everywhere they met the tiny little bushmen with their wicked, poisoned arrows, or the Nguni regiments hunting 1,000 strong, driving the game into set positions where the plumed spearmen waited. With each round of the seasons, the elephant ranges were shrinking. New terrors and new dangers waited in the ancient ancestral feeding grounds, and the old bull was tired, and his bones ached, and the ivory in his jaws weighed him down. Still he moved on up the slope, to the head of the pass, with slow determination and dignity, driven on by his instincts, by the need for space about him, by the memory of the taste of the fruits he knew were already ripening in a distant forest on the shores of a faraway lake. "We must hurry," Yan Shirut's voice roused Zuga, for he had been mesmerized by the sight of the regal old animal, filled with a strange feeling of déjà vu, as though he had lived this moment before, as though this meeting was part of his destiny. The old bull filled him with awe, with a sense of timelessness and grandeur, so he was reluctant to return to the reality of the moment. "The day dies fast," Yan Shirut insisted, and Zuga glanced over his shoulder to where the sun was setting like a mortally wounded warrior bleeding upon the clouds. "Yes," he acknowledged, and then frowned as he realized that Yan Shirut was stripping off his puttees and breeches, folding them and stuffing them together with his blanket and food bag into a crevice in the rock face beside him. "I run faster like this," he answered Zuga's silent inquiry with a twinkling grin. Zuga followed his example, leaving his own pack and pulling off the webbing belt from which hung knife and compass, stripping down to good running order, but he stopped short of removing his breeches. Yan Shirut's skinny, naked yellow buttocks were totally devoid of dignity, and his dangling penis played hide-and-seek from under his shirt-tails. There were some conventions that an officer of the Queen must observe, Zuga decided firmly, and one was to keep his breeches on in public. He followed Yan Shirut along the narrow ledge until they stepped off it onto the forested slope, and immediately their forward vision was limited to 12 yards by the lichen-covered tree trunks. From higher up the slope, however, they could hear the crackle and the ripping sound as the bull with the broken tusk fed on the uprooted tree. Yan Shirut worked out swiftly across the slope to avoid the askari, to circle around him and come at the lead bull. Twice he paused to check the wind. It held steadily down the slope into their faces, and the colourful leaves upon their heads quivered and sighed at its passing. They had gone 100 yards when the sounds of the feeding bull ceased abruptly. Again Yan Shirut paused, and the little group of hunters froze with him, every man instinctively holding his breath as they listened. But there was only the sound of the wind and the singing whine of the cicada in the branches above.
"He has moved on to join the others," Yan Shirut whispered at last.
Zuga was also certain that the bull could not yet have suspected their presence. The wind was steady. He could not have scented them. Zuga knew that the eyesight of the elephant was as weak as his hearing and sense of smell were acute. But they had made no sound. Yet this was a clear demonstration of the benefits that the three old bulls derived from their association. It was always difficult for the hunter to place each of them accurately, especially in thick forests such as this. and the two Askaris seemed always to take station on the lead bull to cover and protect him. To come at him, the hunter must penetrate the screen they threw around him. Standing now, listening and waiting, Zuko wondered if a genuine affection existed between the three animals, whether they derived the pleasure of companionship from each other, and whether the Askaris would mourn or pine when the old bull fell at last with the musket ball in his brain or his heart.
Come!
Silently, Yun Shurut made the open-handed signal to advance, and they went on up the slope, stooping under the low trailing branches, Zuga keeping four paces out on the Hottentot's flank to open his field of vision and fire, concentrating his whole being in his eyes and his ears. Far up the slope there was the snap of a breaking twig, and it stopped them dead once more, breathing shallowly with the tension. But the sound fastened all their attention ahead, so none of them saw the Askari. The elephant waited with the stillness of granite, his seared hide grey and rough as the lichen-covered tree trunks. The shadows thrown by the low sun barred him and broke up the shape of his great body, so he blended into the forest, grey and unearthly as mist, and they tiptoed past him at 20 paces without seeing him. He let the hunters pass him and get up above the wind, and when the acrid stench of carnivorous man was borne thickly down to him through the forest, he took it in his trunk and lifted it to his mouth and sprayed the tainted air over the little olfactory organs under his upper lip, and his smell buds flared open like soft, wet pink rosebuds, and the Askari bull squealed. It was a sound that seemed to bounce against the sky and ring from the peaks above them. It was an expression of all the hatred and pain, the terrible memories of that acrid man smell from 100 other encounters. And the Askari bull squealed again, and launched his huge body up the slope to destroy the source of that evil odor. Zuga spun to the piercing din, his shocked eardrums still buzzing with the sound, and the forest shook with the bull's charge. The dense, shiny vegetation burst open like a storm surf running onto rock, and the bull came through. Zuga was not conscious of his own movements. He was aware only that he was looking at the bull over the open sights of the sharp's rifle, and the blast of shot seemed muted and far off after the ringing squeal that initiated the charge. He saw dust fly from the bull's forehead in a brief little puff, saw the grey skin ripple, like that of a stallion stung by a bee, and he reached back and found the stubby wooden stock of one of the big elephant guns in his hand. Again, there was no awareness of conscious movement. But over the crude V of the sight, the elephant appeared much closer. Zuga seemed to be leaning back to look up at the gigantic head, and the long shafts of yellow ivory reached out over him, blotting out the sky. Clearly he could see the bright white porcelain break in one point of the left-hand tusk. He heard Yun Shurut beside him, and heard his excited shrieks,
"Skitum! Skitum! Shoot him!"
Then the heavy weapon leapt against his own shoulder, driving him back a pace, and he saw the tiny fountain of bright blood squirting out of the elephant's throat like a lovely scarlet flamingo feather. He reached back for the next loaded gun, although he knew there would be no time to fire again. He was surprised that he felt no fear, although he knew he was a dead man. The elephant was on him. His life was forfeit. There could be no question. Yet he went on with the motions of living, hefting the new gun, thumbing back the clumsy hammer as he swung the barrel up. The shape of the huge animal above him had altered. It was no longer so close, and he realized with a thrill that the bull was turning. It had been unable to endure the fearful punishment of the heavy bored guns. He was turning, passing by them with blood streaming down his head and chest. As he passed, he exposed his neck and flank, and Zuga shot him a hand span behind the joint of his shoulder on the line of the lungs, and the ball slogged into his ribcage. The bull was going, crashing away up the slope, and with the fourth gun Zuga hit him high in the back, aiming for the bony knuckles of the spine, where they showed through the scabby grey hide of the sloping back, and the bull whipped his thick tufted tail at the agony of the strike, and disappeared into the forest.
gone like a wraith in the failing light of the sunset.
Zuger and Yan Shirut stared at each other speechlessly, each of them holding a smoking weapon at high port across his chest, and they listened to the run of the bull up the slope ahead of them.
Zuger found his voice first. He turned to his gun-bearers.
"Load!" he hissed at them.
For they also were paralyzed by the close passage of violent thundering death. But his command liberated them, and they each snatched a handful of black powder from the bag slung at their sides and poured it into the still hot muzzles of the guns.
"The lead bull and the other askari will run," lamented
Yan Shirut, himself frantically busy with the ramrod of his Enfield.
"We can still catch up with them before the summit," Zuger told him, grabbing the first loaded gun. An elephant goes on a steep uphill at a very measured pace that a good runner can gain upon, but downhill he goes like a runaway locomotive. Nothing can catch him, not even a good horse.
"We must catch them before the crest," Zuger repeated, and launched himself at the slope. Weeks of hard going over bad terrain had toughened him, and the driving lust of the hunter was the spur. He flew at the slope. Awareness of his own lack of experience that had resulted in such poor shooting made Zuger more fiercely determined to close with the lead bull and vindicate himself. He guessed that as a complete novice he had failed to find the vitals with any of the balls he had fired. He had missed the brain and heart and lungs by inches, inflicting pain and mutilation instead of the quick kill for which the true huntsman strives. He wanted desperately to have another chance to end it cleanly, and he pelted up the slope. Before he had gone 200 yards, he had evidence that his shooting had not been as wide as he had first believed. He checked at a spot where it looked as though someone had thrown a bucket of blood across the stony earth. The blood was a peculiarly bright scarlet, and it frothed with tiny bubbles. Lung blood. There was no question. That last ball fired into the bull's back as he went away up the slope must have raked the lungs. It was a killing shot, but a slow killer. The old bull was drowning in his own bright arterial blood, desperately trying to rid himself of it by squirting it out through his trunk as it bubbled up into his throat. He was dying, but it would take time still, and Zuger raced on after him. He had not expected the bull to stand again. He expected him to run until he dropped, or until the hunters caught up with him. Zuger knew the folly of attributing human motives and loyalties to wild animals. Even so, it seemed that the stricken bull had determined to sacrifice himself in order to allow the lead bull and the second askari to escape across the pass at the crest of the mountains. Up the slope he was waiting for Zuger, listening for him, with those vast grey ears spread wide. His chest, with the girth of a cognac cask of limousin oak, racked and strained to force air into his torn lung. He charged as soon as he heard the man. His huge ears cocked back and rolled at the tips, trunk curled at his chest, shrilling and squealing, blowing a fine red mist of blood from his trunk, pounding through the forest so the earth trembled with each massive footfall and the branches crackled and broke like a discharge of musketry. Panting, Zuger stood to meet the charge, ducking his head and weaving for a clean shot through the thick forest. At the last moment, the bull broke off the charge and swerved up the slope again. Each time the hunters began to move forward, he launched another thunderous mock attack, forcing them to stand to meet him, and then breaking off again. Minutes passed between each charge, and the hunters were pinned down in the thick forest, fretting with the knowledge that already the lead bull and his surviving protégé must have reached the crest and gone away in a rush like an avalanche down the far side. Zuger was learning two hard lessons. The first, as old Tom Harkness had tried to teach him, was that only a novice or a fool underguns an elephant. The light ball of the sharps might be highly effective on an American bison, but the African elephant has 10 times the body weight and resistance. Standing in the Masasa forests, listening to the squealing and crashing of the wounded monster, Zuger determined never again to use the light American rifle on heavy game.